Okay, we're on the time certain. It's times. All right, this is item 466. All right, we are back in session. Could you please read item 466, Carla?
Authorize a class action settlement agreement related to the installation and remediation of curb ramps in pedestrian right-of-way along city streets.
Commissioner Saltzman.
Thank you, Mayor. Before us this morning is a legal settlement that will dramatically accelerate the Portland Bureau of Transportation's efforts to come into compliance with the Americans with Disabilities Act. It is also a way for us to recognize our legal obligation to provide more curb ramps on our sidewalks. We have nearly 40,000 street corners in the city of Portland, and each one represents an opportunity. If built with the correct curb ramps, each corner represents a chance for our city to provide safe and accessible mobility for all Portlanders, regardless of whether they are living with a disability or not. For many years now, we have been working to provide these opportunities. Each year, the Bureau of Transportation has been building hundreds of curb ramps to ADA standards. But the fact remains that we have not been building them fast enough. Thanks to this settlement, we will double the number of curb ramps we build each year and have reached the solution without having to engage in costly and lengthy litigation. And that's good for the city, and that is good for all Portlanders, because instead of being in court, we're going to be out there on the streets building curb ramps. In a moment, we'll hear from Director Leah Treat, and after that, we will hear from Eva Hunziker of the Bureau of Transportation, who will walk us through the settlement. We also have Ken McGare from the City Attorney's Office here to answer any questions, and Nicole Sharon, our Disability Program Coordinator with the Office of Equity and Human Rights. And she has some comments as well. We will then ask the claimants and the Civil Rights Education and Enforcement Center, otherwise known as CREEC, to address counsel. And after that, we can turn it over to general testimony. So I'll turn it over now to Director Treat.
Thank you, Commissioner Saltzman, and the rest of the council. So good morning. I'm glad that we're here today to hopefully approve the settlement. This is really important for many reasons, and one of them is the city's policy commitment to equity. Equity is something that I'm really passionate about. It's one of the reasons that I love working for the city. So this settlement is incredibly meaningful to me. In the realm of transportation, equity can take on many meanings, and one of them is access. And that's what we're talking about today, is access to our system for all, for all users. We launched a Vision Zero initiative in 2015 to eliminate traffic fatalities on our roads. And as part of this, we have focused on investments and programs in communities that have been historically underserved in the city. And thanks to those commitments and investments, Portlanders are safer to our investments. And we've also committed to traffic enforcement without racial profiling. This is a significant piece of equity work that we're doing at the Bureau as well. I think we are one of the few Vision Zero cities in the country that has made this pledge, if not the only one. And internally, we're building up our equity initiatives. In 2016, we hired an equity and inclusion manager. And last year, we completed our five-year racial equity plan, and we've been working on its implementation. We have an active equity committee that is helping to lead our internal conversations about achieving transportation equity across our many projects and programs. And thanks to these initiatives, we have made significant progress in integrating equity into everything that we do. But there's an area where we haven't done as well. We need to be building more curb ramps, and we need to be doing it in a more timely fashion. And when you compare a curb ramp to something like a bridge or a streetcar, it seems like a humble piece of infrastructure, but it isn't. Make no mistake, curb ramps are critical for people with disabilities, and that's why we're here today. We're taking a major step forward in providing people with disabilities with the mobility and connection that they need and deserve, and it's our obligation to provide that. In reaching the settlement with CREEK, the city has pledged to build and upgrade 18,000 curb ramps over the next 12 years. That comes to about 1,500 ramps a year, and it's double the number that we have been building and upgrading in the past. I believe this is a profound victory for our disability community and for all of Portland. Thanks to the settlement, we're going to be a more mobile, more connected, and more equitable city for all Portlanders. Now I'll turn it over to Eva Hunsinger, who's going to walk you through a slide deck with the proposed settlement.
Thank you, Director Treat. Good morning, Commissioners and Mayor Wheeler.
Morning.
I'm Eva Hunsinger, and I'm lucky to serve as a supervising engineer with the Portland Bureau of Transportation. I'm happy to present this settlement for your consideration. As a matter of fact, I'm truly honored. The settlement was the work of many hands, and with me are some of our key partners. Jeremy Patton, our PBOT Business Services Group Manager, Deputy City Attorney Ken McGare, Nicole Chiron from the Office of Equity and Human Rights. Also here are Randy Stenquist from RISC, Scott Modi and Linda Law from the Attorney's Office, all of which have provided extraordinary service to get us to this point. To begin, I'd like to provide you with a brief overview of the anatomy of a curb ramp. Ensuring that curb ramps meet the needs of all users of our sidewalks and streets, we must consider four separate elements. These elements are summed up with the acronym SWAP. S refers to the slope of the ramp, which is a maximum 8.33%, and that's a strict requirement. Where it absolutely came from, we're not sure, but we think it goes back to the days of its 1 inch per 12, 8.33%. W is for the wings on either side of the ramp, which has a maximum of 10%. A is to make sure that the ramp is accessible, meaning that it's free from obstructions, so people in wheelchairs or crutches can actually get up and around the ramp to make their turns. And then finally, in Portland, we use P for perpendicular. So when a wheelchair user comes down the ramp to the street, they don't tip because they're coming to the street in a perpendicular fashion. In addition to meeting these core requirements, an ADA-compliant ramp must also have the yellow bumps at the bottom of the ramp. The official name for these bumps is called the truncated domes. And they provide an important signal to people with visual impairments that they are entering or leaving a traveled way. Here is one of our inspection forms so that you can see how these elements actually work and translate onto a project. We have approximately 27,000 corners with curb ramps in Portland. Many of these ramps are in need of repair. In addition, there are approximately 11,000 other curb ramps without, I'm sorry, approximately 11,000 other corners without ramps. To address this situation, we have had a sustained program of curb ramp installations. For the last few years, we have been installing ramps like these at an average rate of 750 ramps per year. And this is quite an accomplishment, but unfortunately, as Tim Fox, the executive director of the Civil Rights Education and Enforcement Center, called CREEC, and Linda Dardarian, who specializes in disability rights, have brought to our attention that the city is falling short of what the ADA requires of us. In 1991, the Americans with Disabilities Act became effective. It requires that curb cuts be built so that people with mobility devices can get access to and from the street onto the sidewalks. Without curb ramps, people are forced to travel in the street, which poses significant safety risks. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, 1 in 8 people have or have had serious difficulty walking or lifting their feet to clear a step or a curb. Curb ramps remove that barrier. A curbed corner brings us and people so that they can more easily reach the sidewalk. To address the shortfall in our efforts, we entered into a settlement negotiation with CREEC starting in the year 2016. The settlement before you puts into practice our commitment to bringing an accessible Portland. It also demonstrates that when we find a common goal in a higher purpose, parties that would otherwise be adversarial can indeed collaborate to find a positive, productive way to address the issues as partners without resorting to expensive litigation. We found a way to put more dollars towards building an accessible city and providing a plan that makes it more manageable for the city in lieu of it being mandated by a court order. Because we had been constructing ramps over the years and were transparent, and since Portland does not dispute that we aim to be an accessible city for all, CREEC was agreeable to help us as a partner to make this happen in a more manageable way. They were open to working with us to find a way that would allow the city to get compliant over time. This settlement agreement calls for 1,500 curb ramp builds or upgrades per year for the next 12 years for a total of 18,000 curb ramp improvements. It calls for an inventory of all ramps within 2 years and a transition plan that describes the plan for addressing, upgrading, or installing the remaining ramps required to make the city fully accessible. The city will provide the CREEC team with an annual report summarizing the number of locations of accessible curb ramps installed or upgraded, along with access to our GIS system for their own tracking. Curb ramp installations and upgrades will be prioritized for public services, schools, parks, hospitals, and bus stops through the view of an equity lens. The Portland Bureau of Transportation, the Bureau of Environmental Services, the Bureau of Development Services, the Portland Water Bureau, and Parks are all working together to upgrade curb ramps when a utility or pavement work is performed. And our pavement restoration standards reflect that when a curb corner is touched, it must be brought to standard with a curb ramp. The Bureau of Technology Services has made our curb ramps by request system now accessible by moving the link to the intake form to our primary city webpage. Our maintenance operations paving operations now construct 450 ramps annually and are highly proficient in both laying them out and constructing and finishing them nearly year-round. Electronic inspection reports are well underway, and our ADA curb ramp program is one of the first in the country to be certified by the Federal Highway Administration. And our construction specifications require that accessible routes be provided in construction areas. This ordinance is to approve the settlement agreement and any documents necessary to implement the agreement. The City Budget Office, PBOT, and Chief Financial Officer Jennifer Cooperman have, in tandem and together, identified a tentative plan to fulfill the financial terms of the agreement pursuant to the city's budget approval process. Those of us who do not currently have disabilities are fortunate, and it's easy to take our own mobility for granted. As you will hear from our guest today, This is not something that everyone enjoys. We need to do everything we can to remove barriers to safe and equitable access for our fellow Portlanders and those who live with disabilities. We're doing that with this settlement today. We're living up to our ideals of equity and accessibility today. I'm so proud of our city, and I am honored to present this settlement for your consideration. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Nicole, did you want to...
So I think it's important that we support the settlement. I think one of the pieces that have been mentioned and needs to be highlighted is that we as a city adopted the Americans with Disability Act in 1993. And so when something like this comes up, we really don't look at what we're doing now, but what have we done from 93 till now? And so we are grossly out of compliance with curb cuts. And so this is something we have to do. It's something we should have been doing. It's unfortunate that it had to come out of a settlement, but it's happening, which is great. And I think that as we see equity moving forward in the city, it is important, as Leah said, that we need to include disability equity in the racial equity conversation. Not just because disability equity is important, but there are people of color with disabilities. And so I think this is a great step forward for us, and it's something that I hope continues to keep on our radar, the things that we need to be doing to make Portland more inclusive for everyone.
Thank you.
So the panel's happy to take any questions, or we can invite up our next panel.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you all. So now I'd like to invite the claimants and the Civil Rights Education and Enforcement Center attorney to come to the table. And if you could each just give us your name, that we can do that.
I'm Tess Ronig.
I'm Tim Fox with the Civil Rights Education and Enforcement Center.
Good morning. Thank you for being here.
And I'm Linda Dardarian.
Good morning, Linda.
Thank you.
So good morning, council members. I think I'll lead off. I'm going to be very short, and Linda and everyone else will have a few words to say after that. I was kind of thinking about what I wanted to say here today, and I was injured and started using a wheelchair as a result of a sports injury when I was 21 years old. So I've had the experience of not being disabled, and then I've had 3 decades of experience using a wheelchair. And it occurred to me that it might not be obvious to someone who doesn't use a wheelchair the benefits of existing in compliant curb ramps. So I thought I would speak to that. And there's two different categories. There's corners that don't have any curb ramps at all, and those obviously are problematic because if you're driving along and you're trying to get to the sidewalk on the other side of the street and you encounter a corner with no curb ramp, you have to either go some other route or usually just drive in the street until you can find a spot to get up onto the sidewalk. It's also difficult when there are existing curb ramps that are non-compliant. So, for example, there are some curb ramps that are kind of steep, and where they meet the gutter or the street, that can have the reverse slope. And the consequence of that is that as you're going down the steep curb ramp and then encountering the opposite slope, you can pitch forward. All of that has real-life consequences. One thing is that it causes me, particularly in a new city of which I'm not very aware, to want to have somebody with me. So that if I'm going down a ramp that I think is okay but might not be, I've got somebody who can hold my upper body from pitching forward at the bottom of the ramp. So it impacts my independence. It also can be difficult in a variety of settings in which, as a person with a disability, you're trying to integrate with other members of the community. So, for example, when I was a summer associate many, many years ago in Los Angeles, we all went out, and we were walking several blocks to a restaurant, I think it was, and we came across a corner that didn't have a curb ramp. And so I separated off and went around the block while everybody else went on their way. And it's just those kinds of experiences that when you're already in the process of trying hard to kind of feel like you're part of an integrated group, you encounter something like that, and it just emphasizes the differences rather than the likenesses. And this settlement really goes a long ways towards addressing those issues in that it will result in new ramps being put in at corners where there are no ramps, and it will result in ramps that exist but are not compliant being brought into compliance. And that just means a tremendous amount to me as a person with a disability who's kind of grown to fall in love with the city. I love Portland, and I have not had the opportunity to come here until we've had these discussions, and it's just a wonderful place. And so I urge approval of this agreement because it will make this city accessible to all persons regardless of disability. And I want to say one other thing that Linda's going to touch on as well. We've worked with a lot of cities about curb ramp issues over the years, and the folks in Portland have just been amazing. We've really enjoyed getting to know the folks, Eva and everyone else on her team, and I just wanted to personally express my thanks for that.
Thank you. Thank you for those kind words.
Thanks, Tim, and thank you for having us here today to discuss the settlement and for you to approve the settlement. We all have a lot to be very proud of today. Under this agreement, the City of Portland will make substantial improvements to the accessibility of its pedestrian right-of-way for residents and visitors with mobility disabilities by installing and upgrading about 18,000 curb ramps over the next 12 years. Double the rate of installations and upgrades of recent years. This really is a very remarkable commitment that Portland is making. And this commitment was achieved in a remarkable way by remarkable people. How was this achieved? This is a settlement, but there was no lawsuit. Instead, it started with a letter. A letter that described how the lack of accessible curb ramps in the pedestrian right-of-way prevents individuals with mobility disabilities from independently and fully participating in the sidewalk system that Portland makes available to the general public. But the letter also acknowledged that the people who make up the government of the City of Portland are well-intentioned, and that Portland has a commitment to disability equity and wanted to be a leader in ensuring that Portland is accessible to residents and visitors with disabilities. So the letter invited Portland to work together with the community of people with mobility disabilities and us as their representatives to address this urgent civil rights and safety issue and to achieve Portland's goal of embracing the letter and spirit of the Americans with Disabilities Act and other civil rights laws. In other words, instead of throwing a punch to begin a big fight with a lawsuit, we offered Portland an outstretched hand to sit down together and work on problem solving. And to the city's great credit, the city saw this as an opportunity and responded positively to the invitation with a message that, yes, we can do better. And we very much appreciated that. So instead of engaging in costly and expensive and protracted litigation, we worked together with representatives from the city attorney's office and PBOT to problem solve. And that involved frank discussions, open sharing of information, meetings with us and our clients who are here today to talk about the issues with the existing pedestrian right-of-way, corners that are problematic, how to prioritize what needs to be fixed most urgently, identifying funding sources to help Portland achieve the goal of a fully accessible pedestrian right-of-way, and developing a schedule for making the pedestrian right-of-way compliant and accessible on a much more rapid schedule than was being pursued before, but in a way that the city can realize that is workable for the city and for its residents and visitors with disabilities. And this was all done very collaboratively without an adversarial process, which often results in tension and great expense and ruins relationships. Instead, this process resolved the matter much more quickly than litigation, much more efficiently, and at the fraction of the cost of litigation. But best of all, relationships were forged and built and strengthened throughout this process. Working together, we built a relationship of trust and open communication between the city representatives and the community's representatives that will continue for many years. And this was due to the remarkable people involved. Two of them you will hear from soon, Tess Ronig and Alan Hines, and then also Carol Zoom, who is a resident of Portland but also lives part-time in Maui, and that's where she happens to be right now, so she couldn't join us today. There are three Portland residents who took it upon themselves to represent the interests of people with mobility disabilities to ensure that all can safely and independently move throughout the city's pedestrian right-of-way. And we also had remarkable champions and partners in problem solving. Eva Huntsinger from PBOT, who you've heard from, Kent McGare, Scott Modi, and Linda Law from the City Attorney's Office, Randy Stenquist from Risk Management, and also initially David Gallat, who is also here today. They welcomed the opportunity to do the right thing for Portland and its residents and visitors with mobility disabilities, to do so efficiently and effectively for everyone concerned, and in a way that works for Portland, in a way that makes Portland a community partner and a leader for the future. This really is a remarkable achievement, one that we are extremely proud of, and you should be proud of as well. And you should show your pride by approving the ordinance, approving the settlement. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Again, my name is Tess Ronig. I just wanted to share a personal story about my experience with non-compliant curb ramps and hopefully emphasize the importance of this settlement. When I first moved to Portland, I was downtown with some friends, and it was just off Burnside, I think on 9th, and I went down this very steep curb ramp, but didn't see that it had an edge on it, so it wasn't flush with the street, and the front of my wheelchair caught on that, and I was tipped into the street out of my chair. And it was very, very fortunate that I had people with me, and that there wasn't traffic at the time, because I got a few scrapes, but I could have been much more seriously hurt. So it's just very... I'm grateful that this settlement is happening, because it will prevent other people from having to experience that. And then when I lived in Southeast Portland, there were lots of non-compliant curb ramps and just non-existent curb ramps in my neighborhood, and it made it really, really hard for me to navigate my neighborhood. It made it difficult to get to know my neighbors, because I just couldn't move freely around my neighborhood. This settlement is a blessing for all residents with disabilities.
Thank you. We appreciate your being here.
I ran a program that supports people with disabilities to live independently in our community. This settlement means a lot to me and our community in general. There are certain neighborhoods in the city where it is nearly impossible for a person in a mobility device to navigate the neighborhood. So I'm hopeful that with the sound we will make all of our neighborhoods in Portland accessible to people with mobility. So thank you for considering this, and I hope you will approve this.
Thank you. Thank you. We appreciate you being here.
Thank you all for being here. That completes the invited testimony.
Very good. Public testimony, Carla. Do we have people signed up today?
Yes, we have one more. Joe Walsh.
Mr. Walsh.
Good morning. My name is Joe Walsh, and I represent Individuals for Justice. This program and settlement is something you should all be very proud of. In the future, I will most likely be in a wheelchair, so obviously I have a bias when it comes to this. My radius of movement is slowly being taken away from me. So you should be proud of this. The program itself, I sat with a great smile on my face, but I was also haunted because I'm an activist. Why in 2018 are we where we are? Why do we have so much work to do? I always get that feeling when these things come up. You know, why? Where were we in 91, 90, when the ADA was being passed and everybody that had a brain knew that a wheelchair cannot go off a curb unless you built a ramp? I mean, we all knew that. Where were we? Why didn't we do it? And why are we now catching up in such a drastic way? I'm just pleading with you. When you deal with ADA and you're dealing with it today and it's on your mind, think of ways that you can really help. The sidewalks also are in really bad shape. I know that because I pull my friend along with me, and often I'll hit a rise in the sidewalk, it'll pull it right out of my hand. So I'm aware of that. Sidewalks are bad. Your building, you should figure out a way about getting people in the back. I know that's going to be expensive because you have no ramp there. You have to figure out a way to get past those steps. You have some really bright, talented people either working for you or volunteering, and you just heard from some of them. They could figure that out. If you draw people out front, which happens to me a lot, I have to get out on a traffic side because there's no way that you can park and get me out on the non-traffic side. But in the back, it's perfect except when you walk in the door. Then you got a problem. But you can figure that out. Mr. Mayor, you got 3 more years to figure it out. What I'm suggesting to you, can't believe I used all my time. What I'm suggesting to you is don't let this be another one, another issue. This should be something you look in the mirror in the morning and say, how can I help? What can we do today? This is a big one. And I'm praising you. They don't do very often. But all 5 of you, with no exceptions, I'm praising you for this. So thank you for it. And thank you for listening.
Thank you, Mr.
I'm getting older, by the way.
Mayor, I have a couple of questions for staff.
Yes, please, Commissioner Fish.
If we could have the team come back for a second. So thank you for the presentation, and I look forward to supporting the ordinance before us, and it includes authorizing the commissioner in charge to enter into a consent decree, which has certain provisions, including some ongoing financial obligations, which seem reasonable. The primary financial obligation that we're incurring today that's clear to me is in the consent decree, which obligates us to cover the attorney fees for the plaintiff's lawyers for a period of time. And there's a cap that seems to be set for, so we can calculate that obligation. The impact statement, though, says we're still about $52 million short of figuring out how to pay for this, and that's in addition to monies which apparently have been identified through Bill Portland and other general fund sources. And I don't know that I've seen any document that lays all that out, Mayor, and because we are today not being asked to actually formalize how we're going to pay for it, we're entering into the resolution of the dispute. I think it's very important, though, that the council have a complete understanding of all the conversations, the various options. I want to be very clear. This is a huge priority for me that we do this. Someone other than Commissioner Saltzman is going to be in charge of PBOT starting at some point and have the duty to find the resources to implement this. But when I read that, when I read that $61 million has already been identified, including General Fund and Bill Portland resources, that's news to me. And then when I hear we have a $52 million gap that has not been discussed by the council, and then it concludes by saying all this will be addressed as part of the mayor's budget proposal, which it clearly has not, I want to make sure that we're all clear about our obligations, the options before us, and how to pay for this. I'm not saying we have a bad habit of signing onto agreements and then not funding them, but I do think this is going to require some very tough choices going forward on budget time, and I think it's very important that the council have all that information. So if there's a document that identifies everything PBOT has identified as potential funding sources and then the balance that is due and options for that, I would ask for a copy of that. And I know the mayor has an ask in his – has a part of his budget includes, I think, $500,000 or $1 million set aside. But these are much bigger numbers, and I know today is not the day we're going to figure out how to pay for this, but I would like to know what the roadmap is and what our options are because these are very big numbers. Any comment to that?
Good morning, Council and Mayor. This is Jeremy Patton with PBOT. So we did work on a memo with the Chief Financial Officer and CBO and ourselves kind of to try and find a right split kind of between the General Fund and PBOT resources to help pay for this. Hopefully that memo kind of reached your office. It came out kind of in the end of April, but I can kind of describe really quickly some of the bigger level components of that memo and what's been included in the mayor's proposed budget right now, which is kind of up for vote. So starting with the PBOT component, it's about so we have the $113 million problem. And what we've done as PBOT is identified about $60 million of internal PBOT resources over the next 12 years to try and address that. About $60 million.
When you say internal PBOT resources, does that mean non-general fund?
Non-general fund resources, correct. So it's a mix of – we have.
I've got the budget office shaking their head. And that's not what it says in the impact statement. So I want to get a clarification on that because that's not what the impact statement says. Impact statement says that $61 million includes general fund and Bill Portland resources. So that would clearly be general fund resources.
May I make a suggestion? I share your concerns about the financing plan, and I was going to say in my closing statement that I don't agree with the financing plan. I think it would be helpful to approve the settlements because we have to,
right,
and then have a further discussion, perhaps even a work session, about how to pay for it.
I'm all for that. I just because it's before us and this document says that there's been these conversations and potential splits, I want to make sure that we have all the information we need because a future council will be responsible for making sure we honor the commitment we're making today. And it looks like there's a lot of – it was news to me, by the way, Mayor, that there are Bill Portland resources. That's a pot that's going to come under a lot of strain. But to the extent there's general fund resources, Obviously, we can't commit future councils to that, but I want to make sure that we honor whatever the framework is. Otherwise, we could end up being in disputes over implementation of this very quickly, and I don't want that to happen. So you said there's a memo that issued sometime in April?
Yes, there's a memo issued in April that kind of outlines the larger pots of money that would help fill that gap.
Okay. Well, I'm going to take Commissioner Fritz's advice that we will separate these two things, but just speaking for me, and now that it's clear that the city is stuck with me for another 4.5 years, I want to make sure what it is that we're committing to so I can do my part at budget time to make sure we're allocating the money. And right now, I guess I'm just not so clear about how we're going to fund this, so I hope we have a robust discussion about that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you all.
Very good. Thank you. And we've completed public testimony.
Yes.
Please call the roll.
Fish?
Well, first, Dan, thank you for bringing this forward, and thank you to our professional team, and thank you to the plaintiff's lawyers and the plaintiffs who joined us today. It's actually very rare that we have the benefit of having plaintiff's lawyers and plaintiffs coming and testifying, and I think it's very refreshing. And I particularly appreciated the comment that was made that it simply took a letter to engage the city in problem solving, not years of litigation, which is expensive and time-consuming and often doesn't move the ball. And so I credit everyone involved that they reacted to this in a positive and proactive way rather than a defensive way. The truth is that curb cuts are just one of the sort of canaries in the tunnel, but there's so many other examples of facilities and public spaces and other things in our community that are not ADA compliant. And that's one of the reasons, one of the ways the ADA was constructed, the Americans with Disabilities Act, is it has a mechanism for putting people on notice that they have to fix it, and it's not designed to be punitive, it's designed to be corrective. And so here's an example of where a watchdog group has said, we're falling short, and the city has stepped up and said, we're going to do better, and I compliment everybody for the spirit in which they entered into this. We want our city to be welcoming and accessible to people of all ages and abilities. We want to be the leading city of our size in that way. And today I think we're taking another step forward. I'm pleased to vote aye.
Saltzman?
I have a lot of people to thank. I want to first of all thank the claimants for what you've done today, for bringing this before us, but also for sharing your experiences with our sidewalks and our curb ramps. I think that firsthand perspective is something that really helps me appreciate that we need to do better. And I think I want to thank CREEK for sending us that letter rather than a tort claim and engaging in a conversation that's leading to this settlement today, which is a major obligation, but it's also a major responsibility we have to our residents. I wanted to thank Director Treat for her commitment to equity and her receptiveness to the idea of trying to work this out in an amicable manner. Eva Hunziker of Portland Bureau of Transportation, who really led the discussions with our city attorney office on this settlement. And I think she has the benefit of being both not only a professional engineer, but she's also an attorney. So those perspectives really, I think, helped us to get to where we are today. Wanted to thank all the people in our city attorney's office, Ken McGuire, Scott Modi, Linda Law, for their work on this, Nicole Sharon as well, and I think I'm not leaving anybody out. Am I leaving anybody? Randy Stinkwist, yes, Randy Stinkwist from RISC, always an important voice, and Jeremy Patton, too. So thank you all for the settlement. This is the right thing to do. Aye.
You Daly?
Well, thank you to PBOT, city attorneys, and Commissioner Saltzman. Before I launch into my broader comments, I want to say how pleased I am to hear about how you are thoughtfully prioritizing this work, because it is a daunting task, and there is greater need in some areas more than others. So I'm going to be checking out your curb ramps by request and maybe putting in a few in my neighborhood. So, disability is a natural part of the human experience. There have always been people with disabilities. There always will be. And as our life expectancies increase, the number of people with disabilities, especially mobility challenges, will increase as well. I want to note how unusual it is to see multiple people in chambers using mobility devices. I also want to note that having four or five people in the room is actually more reflective of our population, with one in eight people who have or have had experienced mobility challenges. And the fact that this is a rare event highlights the challenges that we're here to talk about today. Sorry, I had skipped ahead of my notes. And that challenge is navigating a world in a city that was not built with wheels in mind, at least not that are not attached to a combustible engine. So many people with disabilities do not view their disabilities as negative or unfortunate. It's the disabling environment, both physical and attitudinal barriers, that is unfortunate. And nearly three decades after the ADA passed, it's inexcusable. I want to thank the advocates who are here today for their grace and their patience and their understanding. I don't think that we deserve it as a city, but it is greatly appreciated nevertheless. Thank you. As noted, the city of Portland is woefully behind on ADA compliance. I hope that this lawsuit will inspire us to be more proactive and do the right thing without the threat of a lawsuit in the future. Our bureaus have had 25 years to plan, budget, and implement their ADA compliance plans. I know we're not voting on a funding plan today, but I want to echo Commissioner Fish's concerns about how these improvements will be funded. Their ADA compliance is neither sudden or unanticipated, and I look forward to that conversation. Aye.
Fritz.
Well, thank you, everybody who's been involved. I vividly remember about 20 years ago when I was a registered nurse working at Oregon Health and Sciences University, taking a person using a wheelchair outside for some fresh air and encountering a curb ramp that wasn't flush with the pavement and having to take a run at it to get over it. It was only a little, like, half an inch to an inch lip, and yet it was very difficult, even with the non-electric wheelchairs, to just push the person up it. And ever since then, I've noticed when I'm walking around where curb cuts are obviously not going to be very helpful for people who are using mobility devices. And so I'm very pleased that we've gotten into this settlement today. Thank you to the claimants and their attorneys for their approach. I really appreciated hearing about the letter and the outreach, and then I appreciated hearing that our attorneys and staff responded with welcoming and with talking together. It made me very happy that of all the equity initiatives nationwide, I believe ours may still be the only one that has a secondary focus, apart from racial equity, on disabilities. And so I want to credit Joe Vanderveer and Nyla McCarthy, who were on the Portland Commission on Disabilities at the time when we established the Office of Equity and Human Rights, who insisted that disability had to be part of what the city does. And I think that's one of the best decisions that I've been a part of on the council. And that was spurred by Nicole Sharon and Amalia Alacondamaris establishing the Commission on Disability, which I got to oversee and one of the first things I got to join council in 2009. And Danielle Brooks and Dora Perry were also a big part of that. So it was good to hear that it was a recognition that the city has been trying. I also hear the recognition that we haven't been trying hard enough and that we need to get to do more. And so this is a historic settlement. I do want to discuss the financing of it. That's for a further conversation that we shouldn't detract from today. So thank you, Leah Treat. I know that you're going to be moving on. This is a legacy that will be appreciated citywide for a very long time. And thank you for your leadership. Eva Huntsinger, you've done an amazing job on this entire project, and the explanation today was extremely clear. city attorneys, the Civil Rights Education and Enforcement Center, all the work that's been done on the age-friendly cities, Commissioner Fish and your leadership for that, and of course Commissioner Saltzman for your guiding of this process, Mayor Wheeler for being willing to say, yes, we're going to have to figure out how to pay for this, and we will. So thank you so much. This is a good settlement for everyone, and I'm happy to move it forward. Aye.
Wheeler.
I'd also like to thank the claimants, and I'd like to thank you both for the substance of your approach. You're right, and you always were right. And I'd like to thank you for the tenor and the style of your approach, which was to approach the city of Portland in a collaborative manner and see if we could work together to find a solution that will bring us both into compliance with the law and provide us the opportunity for a fiscally achievable and a fiscally responsible approach to funding the solution. So thank you, and I agree with all the positive things that my colleagues have said, and I'm glad Commissioner Fritz just added to the mix that while the disability community is front and center in this conversation, I don't want to lose sight of the fact that we have declared that we are going to be an age-friendly city. And with an aging population, that means these kinds of access and mobility and accommodation issues need to be more highly prioritized than they've been. I wouldn't be me if I didn't slightly rain on the parade. I want to remind us what we heard today. What we are doing is we are working to come into compliance with federal law. This has been federal law for decades. And a former city council back in 1993 made it very clear that we were going to adhere to federal law. And it is only through the largesse and the generosity and the approach to partnership through the claimants that we were able to get to that point. But Commissioner Fish raised a question that's been really interesting to me since I got here however many months ago. The question of how do we pay for things, number one, and can we bind future councils, number two. When the city council in 1993 said that they were going to uphold federal law, ADA, they bound this council. And the reality is there aren't a whole lot of great financing options out there. There are financing options, and it's going to take a ton of hard work for us to be able to realize the potential of those financing options. And we're here today to recommit to working to find whatever that right package is. And I certainly want to work with my colleagues to find a package that we collectively agree is the right package. But the bottom line is that for 25 years, we have been ignoring our requirements here writ large. I understand that the city has been committed and individuals have been committed to this and policies have demonstrated that. But in terms of actually complying with the letter and the spirit of ADA, we didn't do it. And therefore, every year we did not do it, our legal and financial risk has grown. And I think part of my job coming in as the mayor is to direct all of our city bureaus to clearly identify our legal and financial risk so that this city council, because we are committed to it, so that this city council can actually put plans on the table to address our legal and financial risk. I do not want to be in a position where 25 years from now some mayor sits in this chair and says, holy cow, what did you do to me? Why did you leave this exposure on the table for us? That is an intergenerational transfer of responsibility and resources. And it's not going to continue to happen, not under my watch. So I want to thank the partners who are here today. This is great work. It moves us in the right direction. And I'm just grateful that we are lucky enough to have such fabulous partners in this. I vote aye. The ordinance is adopted. Thank you all for being here.